our interest exclusion. There was a number change in the IRC code, and this corrects that, brings it up to date.
Questions, comments?
Number two deals with section 14 of the bill on page 8. Again, clarification language there so that it spells out various situations that cause a difference in the basis of an asset, and then it clarifies that those differences have to be dealt with when the asset is sold to reflect the different treatment for state versus federal.
Jim, why don't you take a shot at it?
Yeah.
I also left it. Steve didn't do a good job, but it's fairly complicated.
Mr. Chair, Jimmy Gaffney with the CPA firm of Arthur Anderson and member of the board for the Oregon Society of CPAs. I agree with the statement that this is a clarification of something that already exists from the conformity efforts in prior years. And the concern is that if you have, for example, a different method of depreciation, that means that your basis, your net basis for purposes of computing gain or loss is going to be different for state purposes than for federal purposes. And this simply recognizes the fact and tries to enumerate the identified situations, and I agree with the situations that are enumerated, that you may end up with a different basis. And the point is that, say for example, for Oregon, that someone is recovering their costs over a slower method because of the difference in depreciation methods, they'll then have a higher basis for purposes of computing gain, which says that overall, they're going to recover all of the costs that they've put into that asset. It's just going to be a different timetable than it is for federal purposes. I think it's the essential ingredient once you go on to a different system for cost recovery.
Okay, questions? Okay, Steve, go ahead.
Okay, number three is dealt with in section 16A of the bill as amended on page 4 and 5 of the amendments. There's the feds have a deduction on the corporate side for expenses incurred for renovations to allow easier access for the handicapped. The state also has provisions. The federal deduction amount is now higher than the state, and what the language in the amendments does is to clarify that if the federal deduction is more than the subtraction allowed for state purposes, then you don't get any additional subtraction on the state side. You've already recognized the federal amount. So that was a clarification provision to make sure that you don't get the federal deduction, and then also on top of that, the state deduction.
So you're saying you do get the federal amount?
Yes, and you would, if the federal amount dropped below the state amount, then the state amount of $25,000 would determine the deduction amount.
So it's kind of like always the larger amount?
Yes.
Heads you win, tails you make.
But not killing.
Yeah, but not killing.
Yeah. Belinda, do you think they have?
Representative Schoon, also one of the things that we clarified because of the subcommittee's request, it looked like in the language that if you had a situation where the feds was allowing an amount and Oregon was allowing an amount, the way the language read that you would decrease the Oregon amount by the federal amount. If that's $35,000, you would theoretically have a negative, and so we clarified that language also.
Okay. Okay, Steve, go ahead.
At number four deals with section 21B of the bill on page 12.
What was the reference on three? I missed it.
Excuse me, it's section 16A, but it's really in pages 4 and 5 of the amendments. Right, section four is, excuse me, number four is section 21B, I think I'll let Gary handle this one. Don Wall can probably do a better job than I can, but there was a window period from August 31, 1982, until we did the 83 reconnect, when we were not tied to federal law for the 338 treatment. When a corporation purchases another target corporation, and the federal law allows a step up in basis of the assets, I believe, as those assets were bought and sold in one transaction. So it allows a step up without going through the buying and selling process. Okay. Who wants to try?
Let me go back to the basics of what generally happens. Generally, when you purchase stock in a corporation, you do not change the basis in those assets for that corporation. It has no effect on the basis. But when you purchase the assets of a corporation, your basis in those assets is essentially what you paid for them. So you would get this stepped-up basis. So what Section 338 does for federal purposes is that it says we're going to recognize this for essentially what it is. If you buy more than 80% of that corporation in a one-year period, you are in essence buying that corporation for its assets. And in many cases, you see it then liquidated. So what they're saying with 338 is that if you meet these guidelines, that we will treat it as if you had bought the assets. You will get this stepped up basis for purposes of depreciation. The corporation that is being acquired may or may not realize gain on the transaction. And what we are doing with these provisions is that we've already adopted that. I mean, we're following that in 83 and 84, but this is one of those cases where the effective date was 8/31/82, and there is a four-month window period. While I guess our general feeling is that we don't like to go back and retroactively do this, this is one of those situations where it causes more headaches to not close that window period. What you're really doing is causing a tremendous discrepancy in the basis of those assets that they would then have to keep track of for years and years, having a different basis for Oregon purposes than you would for federal. And it really mirrors the treatment that we had prior to 83. We had some provisions that did this same thing if they immediately liquidated the corporation. The only difference here is that they don't have to liquidate it.
Jim, would you like to comment on this headache number 338?
Mr. Chair, no, I have really no comment.
You agree? So,
yes.
What was said as far as the CPAs and the individuals out there are concerned, that it does help get rid of a headache.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Questions? Representative Trader?
The department give us any idea how many folks are going to fall into this small window that you're now closing?
Representative Trahan, to my knowledge, that we've gotten only about two or three calls, so we know about those. The other people we don't know about, but I still think there'll be very few.
Any questions or comments? Okay, go ahead, Steve.
Right, number five deals with S corporations. Section 12 of the bill, as amended on page 3 of the amendments, deal with the adjustments to the S corporations. Again, I probably should defer to the department, but for years 81 and 82, the adjustments are done under the corporate provisions, and then for years 83 and following, those adjustments would be done under the personal income tax statute. I think this is because of a change in the federal treatment for S corporations.
Mr. Chairman, basically what happened was in 1981 and 82, because of the depreciation differences, the only reason why on the S corporation that you would have income, taxable income, would be attributable to that ACRS difference. In 1983, the legislature said that's not what they wanted to happen, and so they said in that situation that they would allow you to back off that amount and basically would be taxed at the shareholder level. But in 81 and 82, it didn't go back and pick those years up. So right now we're in litigation on many, many cases because of the 81 and 82 years. What this bill would do, and we've worked with the CPAs, you know, on the wording and the language, but what this would do is retroactively allow that same modification at the S corporation level and then again tax it at the shareholder level for 81 and 82, and basically would close that litigation that we're presently in with several taxpayers. The reason why 81 and 82 is treated differently and we've used the corporation modifications was in 81 and 82, federal treated an S corporation differently. It was the subchapter S, and it was treated more like a corporation that didn't have flow-through purposes. In 1983, they changed that, and now it's more like a partnership, so that's why we are now flowing through to the individual using the personal modification.
Questions? Belinda, would you explain that as briefly as possible about the flow-through provisions that are possible now and what it applies to?
For the differences?
Yes.
One example would be depletion. On the personal income tax side, you cannot have depletion in excess of basis. The corporation can. So for 81 and 82, we'd be saying that they would be following the corporation method, and then 83, they would be limited to what a personal income tax person would. Interest is treated differently. You have the 85%, for example, on the corporation side, and you have the $200, $400 exclusion on the personal income tax side for the modification. Do you remember what some of the other?
Charitable contributions is one example. In 81 and 82, if the corporation made a charitable contribution, their limits were either, I'm not sure when it changed, it's either 5 or 10% of their taxable income. In 83, now if that same corporation, same S corporation, makes a charitable contribution, the shareholders' portion of that, say I own 50% of the corporation, I am treated as having made 50% of that contribution, and it's subject to the limitations that I have on my return that are based on my income and other contributions that I've made. So it's treated as if the expense were paid or the income were earned by the individual in 83 and later.
Okay, thanks. I want to ask a couple more questions, then I'll do it later. Any other questions or comments on this? Okay, good.
Number six is in section 21E of the amendments, on page six of the amendments. It deals with allowing some modification, either on the income side or on the deduction portion of the return that would have been taken after the 1983 reconnect, except that it was precluded by the reconnect, and this has caused some problems where the state did not allow it to be taken prior to 83 when the feds did, and then the reconnect changed that, but then that left the taxpayer in a difficult situation, thinking that he might be able to take a deduction, and then with the 83 reconnect change in the law, he couldn't. So you may want to ask for a specific example from the department if they can provide one as to how this would work. that would help.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, an example, and an actual example that we have, and this is how this amendment came about, is deals with a contingent liability. It's an item that federal has a special provision for that says, you know you have this lawsuit hanging out there, and you've set aside a certain amount of funds, what you reasonably expect to lose in that lawsuit. Therefore, once you segregate those funds, you can deduct them at that time. For Oregon purposes, we don't have that special provision, and that item is only deductible when it's fixed and determined. Particular situation we had, for federal purposes, the deduction was allowable in 80 or 81. For Oregon purposes, it would have been allowable in 83. So what happened, they deducted it for federal purposes in 80 or 81, made a modification for Oregon, so effectively they didn't deduct it for Oregon. When 83 came around and we connected to federal law, the deduction was not allowable for federal purposes, so since we take federal taxable income, it wouldn't be included in that. And so if there is not some sort of modification, I guess, where we allow that deduction in 83, the taxpayer would lose it entirely. So we do have some transitional provisions that cover, already in the language, 317.038, which is being amended, that cover some of those items. But the new language is going to cover two situations, I guess, that weren't anticipated beforehand. One, that an item, an expense item, would not be able to be deducted at all. Secondly, that possibly an item of income, due to timing differences, would not be reported at all. So this expands those transitional provisions to cover those other possibilities.
Questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Trey.
I have a question and a comment. It sounds like a reasonable approach, particularly where we're going to the procedure, bonding procedure, where we every 2 years start changing, again, try to catch up and recognizing some of the glitches that are going to occur.
Mr. Chairman, I might also add that if we didn't do this, and I don't think we did back when we connected to personal income tax, in some cases, the courts have made these modifications for us. So we're anticipating, I guess, and trying to save that litigation.
Mm-hmm. Representative Clore will be ready to make a speech on complete reconnect after we go through this morning.
This is a good time to do that, though. The chairman is here to be offended. If you look at this, am I called on here?
Yes, Representative Clore.
If you look at this list, an awful lot of the things on this list are things that we're going through, and we're saying it's the Oregon way to be different, and we, second guess them time and time again, and then we got to go through and make a whole bunch of crazy adjustments to make things work because we're so much different, and it just really doesn't make sense. I'm sorry.
Are you arguing for a full-time legislature?
No, I don't think a full-time legislature is necessarily implied in that. I really don't.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
What we're doing, we've reconnected as of December 31, '82.
Yeah.
And now we're considering reconnecting as of December 31, '84. Our code has been static since 82.
Exactly.
But the federal code hasn't.
Exactly.
We can reconnect as of May 23rd today if we wanted to, but it still wouldn't correct anything. They're still going to continue changing their code, and the next session's got to go through the same drill. Unless we meet constantly and adopt as they adopt.
Well, and I guess, Mr. Chairman, the question that I had asked before, and I'm still not sure that if it isn't possible, and that is, why can't we just say, henceforth, we are connected. Whatever they do, we are connected. We don't have to take actions and second guess them and say, well, now they did this yesterday, do we agree with that? They did this last Thursday, do we agree with that? We just say, whatever they did is us.
I don't know if Barbara wants to answer it up. I'm not sure if the Oregon legislature can delegate its taxing authority to the Congress.
Robert, do you want to comment on that?
Sure.
Or to what extent we can or can't?
Chairman. I'm Barbara Seymour from Legislative Council. It's more of a, actually more of a political question than a legal one. Actually, it's a revenue impact. Years ago, we did connect completely. And then we had to go off the connect, and we did it first, like with the standard deduction and the personal exemption. And then we finally broadened it to the whole code. And then we tried to disconnect again, and the federal law was changed, and we had to freeze again.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative.
That's not the question. The question is, could we somehow say we are totally connected to the federal law as it moves along, and whatever changes are made nationally, those changes are our changes too? Forgetting politics and forgetting revenue, because I already suggested another answer to that too, and that is that if it turns out that as the law, as the federal changes, if it turns out that that ends up producing less for us, we could adjust the rates, but not the provisions. So I don't buy that either. Could we do that?
Mr. Chairman, there's no reason at all why you can't. There's a constitutional amendment that allows us to completely connect. And I didn't make myself clear. We have completely connected in the past. And what I was trying to say, it is the anticipated revenue impact that causes you as a body to legislatively disconnect rather than any legal thing that stands in your way of a complete connection. The thing that stands in your way of a permanent rate adjustment all the time, I suppose, is the referendum, you know.
What's the Oregon Constitution site that you're referring to?
Oh, heavens, I always figured it. I read it to the subcommittee. I think it's in Article 9, Section 32, or Article... it's Section 32 of the
Article. Barbara did go through this discussion with the subcommittee, and I still don't buy it. That's okay.
Thank you, anyway.
Well, always looking for it.
So
you never remember. I think it's Article 4, Section 32, because it's an exception to the legislative delegation powers.
Could you read it, please?
Article 4, Section 32. Section 32, Article 4. Notwithstanding any other provision of this Constitution, the Legislative Assembly, in any law imposing a tax on or taxes on, in respect to, or measured by income, may define the income on, in respect to, or by which such tax or taxes are imposed and measured, by reference to any provision of the laws of the United States, as the same may be or become effective at any time or from time to time, and may prescribe exceptions or modifications to any such provisions. At each regular session, the Legislative Assembly shall, and at any special session may, provide for a review of the Oregon laws imposing a tax upon or measured by income, but no such laws shall be amended or repealed except by a legislative act. So it's an exception to the general rule against delegation.
Following this question, Barbara, but following Representative Glory's idea of a full reconnect, and then if the feds do something different, we suddenly don't have the income we need to meet the budget we've already adopted. Could we automatically allow for a floating rate, which is being suggested, would be necessary to raise that same amount of dollars, Barbara, or would we have to come back to the special session and adjust those rates?
Barbara, what do you think? We'd be tying it to revenue, I guess, and letting the rate float according to the revenue we needed.
Up and down, George?
I would assume it would have to be. I don't know. I'm not sure it's possible. I think that's where we get tied up. But.
Not under that constitutional provision. That only speaks to the measurement of taxable income, not to the rate.
Not to the rate. And Mr. Chair, I guess go a step further. That's my concern with what I suggest. I think that is great, but if we know, and we do, that the feds are gonna do some different things. They'll either raise more income or less, and, you know, all this is gonna happen. If we had to come back every time to have a special session to adjust the rate so we've got enough dollars to meet that budget, we've got the same problem that we do now.
Representative Clay, any further comments or questions?
Okay, thanks, Barbara. Okay.
Where are we, Steve?
We're ready to move on then to number 7.
Okay.
This relates to sections 29 through 34 of the bill and some sections of the amendments. The special session.
Do you know the numbers of the amendment, the pages?
I believe it's section 30A, sections, or pages 14, 15, I guess part of 16 of the amendments. Special session last summer adopted a water's edge approach to unitary provisions for taxing unitary corporations. After having some more time to look at that language, Elizabeth Stockdale, I think, wanted to change some of the language to make it clearer and more concise. So that's what the amendments to these sections do in modifying Oregon laws from 1984. In that process, though, there was one issue that the subcommittee dealt with in trying to give the department some direction as to what they could look at in determining whether a unitary group existed or not. And I don't know if you wanted to restrict the discussion now just to the changes in the language without changing the intent, or whether you want to get into the issue now that the subcommittee dealt with.
Well, I don't think we can get into the language really without getting into the issue. And Jim, would you explain the problem that we're faced with as you see it?
Mr. Chair, there are several issues that need to be corrected technically after the special session. And I agree with the ones that have been that are included in these amendments as they presently stand. There's one thing with which we take exception at this time, and that is we think the entities that you should look to for purposes of determining whether or not you have a unitary business needs to be better clarified. For example, at this time, and after some long discussions, we don't think it's clear whether you look to affiliated entities on a worldwide basis or whether you look to affiliated entities just within the shores of the United States, or whether you look to entities just within the consolidated return. We don't think that that's clear enough on its face. And we have some language that we would suggest that we think will clarify that.
Well, let me stop just for a minute.
Okay.
I think, committee members, you can see just from the comment that Jim Gaffney made that we have a very serious problem here. And I think that Bruce would probably agree with me that we're really re-examining the unitary method, since we have to determine, again, who is and who isn't in the unitary group, because that's the essence of the issue. So we have to go back and look at that again. So we do need to have a lot of discussion on this.
Mr. Jim? Chair, I would put in the nature of a technical correction, and when I asked the question earlier, the answers that I received, I agree with. In other words, I think that the entities you would look at would be just within the so-called water's edge, and I think that there's agreement, it's a matter of, getting the amendments drafted, which I think that we have, and it's a matter of getting them inserted into 2011. But I would put them in the technical nature. I don't think that there's as much disagreement over the concept as there is simply over whether or not the words accomplish that.
Sure.
Yes, Representative Eva.
One of the questions that Representative Hamlin was asking in this context was, would our revenue people have the ability to go to the foreign corporation to examine their books, to examine arms length transactions, or to examine any type of transaction to help us make the determination of whether or not this is a unitary group? Would we have the authority to go into someone else's foreign corporation books?
Representative Hugh, I would defer to the revenue on that. As I stated before, my understanding is that they could before and can now, and it's a question of resources, I think, more than anything else. But again, I would defer to the department on that question.
Representative Hugo, I would say that depends on which version